Yes. Speaking of Baltimore City, State Senator Jill Carter, who is a member of Judicial Proceedings, authored some of the juvenile justice reform laws that were passed in 2022. Give me your reaction to what the governor and your leadership, the Senate President and the House Speaker, proposed today.
So I think that from what I'm able to ascertain, because really the text wasn't even available online, but I have an idea what the bill does. My first thing is that, you know, I and everyone am amenable to anything that is actually going to be in the best interest of our children across the state. The Juvenile Reform Act was, of course, passed because we were the most carceral state for children, the most punitive state for children in the whole country. And so there was a need to make some changes to try to provide adequate services and treatment and rehabilitative programs for our children that were in trouble, as opposed to just lock them away. And so to the extent the bill does not reverse the philosophy and the need for those changes, you know, I may not have a problem with it. I think that there are a couple of things that concern me because of the fact that I don't see any data that would suggest that the proposals are actually addressing a problem. But then there's some other ones where I think they're good. For example, I think the shortened time for the department to make a decision on a juvenile case, whether they're going to forward it or make some type of a complaint, I think that's important. I think there should be a shortened time. We've shortened all the other times in the juvenile system.
Sure.
I think that the extension of probation is rather arbitrary, meaning there hasn't been the production of any evidence that there's been situations where prosecutors really, really desperately need more time for a kid on probation, and they argue for it, but the court says, sorry, the law doesn't allow it.
The probation part of it was argued not so much that it was punitive, and I think it was Delegate Clippinger that said this at the news conference, that it's not punitive, it's just that it gives the juvenile offender, time to complete his or her rehabilitation programs, and it's more likely to be successful.
That's already in the law, though. The law already says that probation can be extended for good cause, for treatment programs or rehabilitative programs, and there's also aftercare, that when probation ends, if a child is still in a program, they can stay in the program. So I don't think it was necessary. But again, you know, what I'm saying is I think it's rather arbitrary, because you can say, well, it's extended to give them more time, but one, they should already the department should already have these programs and services ready the day the child gets on the probation. It should not be a case where the child's sitting there waiting for 3 or 4 months to get on a program. So I think that's where the fix needs to come in.
The legislation does not reverse when police can talk to offenders without
because
a lawyer present.
Because that's not necessary, because police can talk to anyone at any time.
But it does it does give some guidelines to better train officers on how to use it, right?
So I'm not aware. I hadn't seen that part of the bill, so I don't know if it does. But they certainly could use better training. They could use better education and better training, both on the SINS process and on how to honor the Fourth Amendment and Fifth Amendment and Miranda rights, which they already should really know. I will say that I'm happy and unhappy about one part of it, which is my Nicola Strotter Act, which is mandatory SINS petitions, is thrown into it. But I'm happy that it's considered, but I'm not happy that it's put into this bill and not given its own separate bill, because I think the family deserves to have a Nicola Strotter Memorial Act and not just something thrown into another bill with provisions that they may or may not even agree with.
Nicola Strotter was the teenage girl killed by a 9-year-old who took his grandmother's gun. What would that bill do?
Well, the issue there is because the child is 9 or was 9 at the time, we weren't aware that there was any intervention or anything that was going to happen. And this would make child in need of supervision petition mandatory for any child that commits an act that results in the death of another. And they are ineligible for prosecution because of the fact of their age. So I think it's a bill that's not going to be needed much because we don't have many children that age that commit offenses. We also don't have many children, frankly, under the age of 13 that have possessions of guns. I think the department's numbers are about five children under 13 that have been in possession of guns. So,
but shouldn't a child's 10, 11, 12 years old possession of guns, and there's some other offenses that where they would also be charged? I think third-degree sex offense was one. Shouldn't there be charges if, even if it's a few children, committing an offense like that, shouldn't they face charges?
I think it depends on the circumstances. And I know that might sound kind of odd, but yeah, there should be charges in some situations, maybe. But, you know, a good number of these gun possession cases are circumstantial, that the child could be in proximity to a gun. The child's big brother could have a gun. The child could be found walking down the street with the big brother. They're both charged with the gun. So it really is a case-by-case, fact-specific decision. But I'm not even opposed to the idea of charges in those instances. I'm just saying I don't know that that is something that makes a huge difference, because there's about 5 kids under 13 that have been found to have guns.
We're going to leave it at that. Baltimore City State Senator Jill Carter, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care, ma'am. Bye-bye.